From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
In emergency medicine, you don't pick your patients. You don't get to decide who walks in the door. You don't, you know, you can be thanked by one patient and be cussed out by the next patient. Gotcha. You have drug seekers that come in the door. You have people who have real pain that come in the door. Mm-hmm. You have patients who pretend to be in pain. You have patients who never followed up with their cardiologist, and, you know, they come to you to fix their problems, and they never went to clinic. You know, so you just don't get to really, you know, have any control over your shift or your day. I have friends who, you know, either they moved and they had to try to establish with a new OBGYN because they need a new doctor, and then the OBs sometimes get to kind of, you know, decide if they'll be able to take that patient based on their risk or their history, etc. With ER, you just, whatever comes in the door is your responsibility during that period that they're there. And that could be seen as a positive or a negative thing. To me, it's just part of the job.
Dr. Foye Ikiator, emergency room physician and medical director of Lifesaver ER, located in Houston, Texas. As an ER doctor, Dr. Foye can treat and provide life-saving acute care. She can also manage blood pressure, diabetes, depression, and a host of other chronic ailments. At Lifesaver ER, there's a team of healthcare providers dedicated to providing excellent and compassionate care. There are physicians, nurses, and staff pride themselves on their ability to exceed each patient's expectations. Their goal is to deliver high-quality, affordable, efficient adult and pediatric emergent and urgent care. They understand what it means to have to visit an emergency room, and their goal is to make the experience as comfortable and seamless as possible while providing high-quality medical attention. I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Dr. Foye Ikiator, Medical Director of Lifesaver ER in Houston, Texas, in Black America.
As far as what, you know, led me to do it, I work in a few ERs in Houston, and a lot of times I get to work and there are, you know, 15 or 20 patients in the waiting room waiting on me. There are patients in the ER waiting to be admitted. Okay. There are patients who are admitted who can't get a bed upstairs, so they're taking up space. So you just start seeing the repetitiveness or the clogged system where you can't get patients out of the ER and you can't get patients in the waiting room inside the ER to get treatment. A lot of times we'll go into the waiting room and pull patients aside to a small room and try to start the workup, look at their wrist, listen to their lungs, see if they need an x-ray, and just start to try to basically triage them from the waiting room or try to order tests or start treating them from the waiting room because you don't want them just sitting there waiting. You don't know if there's a heart attack in the waiting room waiting there. You don't know if that chest pain out there is a pneumonia or a blood clot in the lungs. You don't know if that fracture there is not getting blood supply to the, you know, to the extremities. So you have to, and you're responsible for everything that comes in there because your name is already on the chart whether you saw them or not.
Dr. Foye Ikiator is a board-certified emergency medical practitioner. She received a medical degree at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. After medical school, she received further training at Emory University School of Medicine and Public Health in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Foye moved to Houston to further her practice. She gained extensive experience working within the St. Luke's health system. Within a few short years, she decided it was time to do what she wanted to do. In December 2015, Dr. Foye and her husband opened a standalone full-service emergency room in Northwest Houston. Since opening the facility, Lifesaver's emergency room, she and the physicians, have made it a point to offer free services to those in need. She has promoted free flu shot programs in order to provide preventive health services at no cost to the community. She has also teamed up with community leaders to provide CPR classes to the layperson at no cost. She truly believes in service to others as a key to success. Today, Dr. Foye directs a freestanding Lifesaver emergency room where she can take more time with her patients and counsel them on specific needs as well as to promote the kind of medicine she believes is necessary in today's community.
I was born in Ibadan, Nigeria, which is in West Africa, but I've lived in the U.S. since I was about 8 years old. I lived in Tuskegee, Alabama for a couple of years and eventually moved to Atlanta, Georgia around high school.
And what was life like growing up basically in Atlanta?
in Atlanta. It was fine. It was in the suburbs of Atlanta. Had parents who worked really hard to make sure we could have the suburb life, and I was able to be in the band in high school and be in the marching band as well as do flag, which is just extracurricular activities. I started working at Kroger when I was about 15 or 16, whatever age you were allowed to be able to work to make some extra money. But I mean, it was, I really can't see anything particularly exciting about it.
Having your father as a veterinarian, did that attract you towards medicine at a young age?
Oh, definitely. My dad is more of a scientist than he was a vet. He was doing research on viruses or immunoviruses in animals, kind of like the HIV virus.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have us in the lab helping him. We would help write up his reports. I learned how to type when I was really young, so I could type out the different DNA chains in animals and goats and cats and things. So we would learn how to use pipettes and make agar for solutions in the lab. So that's how we would spend some of our extracurricular time, is working with him in his lab.
Now, doing all that, what did your peers think about you being so inept for science?
I don't know what they thought about it. It was just something, they had an interest in, and it didn't, yeah. My parents, we were able to stay pretty diversified in what we were able to participate in. So we'd do our science sometimes, and then I'd be in band, and I also played soccer. So I was never just, a science geek or a soccer kid. I was able to sort of diversify in all the things I was interested in.
You also talk about when I was doing the research in the ninth grade, you did a summer institute program at NASA?
Yeah. So one summer I worked with Tuskegee University, a collaboration with NASA, where we were, and they're still, it's definitely active now and flourishing in that program. But, a lot of people in space, they don't have all the, resources to buy food. So they're able to grow a lot of the foods that they eat in the spaceship, in the spacecraft. So they've developed technology where they can infuse water with nutrients and grow things like peanuts and vegetables from water that's been infused with nutrients. That was a pretty amazing experience to see it start from a bowl of water, and then by the end of the summer, you had plants and vegetables growing from that, from a start of water.
Obviously, you were real good at science. What were some of your other subjects you were pretty good at in high school?
I really liked debate.
Mm-hmm.
I liked law. I liked drama. Like I said, I was in band, so I liked music. So, I think anything that you could get that I had an interest in that I could, wrap my mind around, I would eventually become, I guess, not good at it, but I develop an interest in it. So I wouldn't say I was terribly good at math or anything, but I knew math was necessary. I hate math, but
really,
but you have to understand math to understand physics and to understand some of the why protons and neutrons work. It all boils down. There's going to be math involved in some of these things to be able to do well in your classes. So whether I had an interest in it or not, I knew it was sort of the background that you had to overcome.
What was it about the University of Georgia? Was that the only school that you offered a full scholarship?
No. It was in Georgia. It was about 30 minutes from our house.
Okay.
And my parents didn't, my older brother, he had a scholarship, and he went to University of Florida, and he became a Gator. And, I saw how it kind of put my parents through having to drive and go visit him and call in trying to find him sometimes, and so they didn't even really give me that many. They were just like, yeah, UGA is a really good school, and you should go there. So I think we thought about Spelman, and it was a little bit farther, and it was going to be a little more expensive, but University of Georgia was close by the house. It's a really awesome school, and they have a really great program there, it was, like I said, it was closer to home. The campus programs they had were very good. They have a lot of programs that are tailored for minority students, where they make sure you're not just one of the students in the in a huge sea of students. So you have the programs that are tailored for Black students to keep you sort of grounded, to keep you mentored, and just keep you focused on why you signed, why you're there, why you're enrolled. So it ended up working out very well for me. I already knew I wanted to go to medical school, so I didn't want to go to a school where I'd have to pay out of state tuition on top of, you know, on top of having to figure out how to get into medical school and how I was going to pay for that. So it turned out really well financially for us.
Oh, no, that's right. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Dr. Foya, emergency room doctor and owner of Lifesaver ER, located in Northwest Houston, Texas. You attended the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Health. Tell us about that experience.
That school is based in Madison, in Madison, Wisconsin. My older brother also went to that school.
Okay.
He was 1 year ahead of me, so he was somebody I always, you know, he's somebody I always look up to. Seemed to always follow in his footsteps, actually. But he kind of, you know, put me on that school. That, you know, they have a focus on public health and giving back to your community, learning about behavioral health as well, and learning why, you know, certain groups of people do things that they do, how we end up in different cycles in different sectors in the community. And so when I applied to the school, the dean of the school was very encouraging and told us, you know, that definitely we would be able to pursue whatever interest we had. And at the time, my interest was in international medicine. I always thought I would be able to travel all over the world and be sort of like a doctor without borders,
mm-hmm.
where you get to go to different countries and help. And they have a lot of programs that are geared toward that. So that was why I went to that school. And I was able to actually put that into practice when I was there. I received a scholarship or funds that I could go to. I actually went to Nigeria during my third year of college, and I was able to work in an HIV clinic in Nigeria, in Lagos, Nigeria. And that was one; those are one of the perks that they, you know, kind of shared with me when I was applying to the school. Being in the school was different. I was it was in Madison, Wisconsin. There weren't that many minorities at the school, but that being said, it was still a very very strong education that I feel I received. University of Wisconsin is one of the top programs in medicine in the country, so it was very challenging. My race and my ethnicity played no factor in the when it came down to the test. That's not black or white. That's just, do you know the information at that point? The clinicals were clinicals. You work with different doctors, and that was always slightly challenging. Feeling like you do have to, that's when you have to perform. So you can do as well as you want on your test on paper, but when it comes to your actual your clinicals, where you're speaking before, you know, 10, you know, white physicians or right. older physicians, or you're in a room of people that nobody else looks like you, you have to perform, you know, at or above what their expectations would be. So that was a different experience for me, definitely. But I do feel like I had a lot of mentors and people that had my back. One of the women on the admissions board, Dr. Gloria Hawkins, is one of the deans, and she was pretty much responsible for the minority affairs on the campus for the medical students. And she would always advocate for us and, you know, sort of encourage us to do our best, make sure that we're performing above and beyond what the expectations are for us in school.
Now, go ahead and finish.
I would just say it was a good experience. I left school, I graduated feeling just as capable and competent as anybody else from medical school leaving there. And I was able, when I graduated from University of Wisconsin, I had, you know, multiple offers and places I could do my residency. And I carry my degree from there with a, you know, like a badge of, you know, approval or stamp of honor because I made it.
I understand. Now, having lived in Atlanta I've been to Madison, spent some time there some years ago learning the ropes of public affairs radio. The weather change. You're a southern young lady. You go to Wisconsin, and it gets cold there in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. It was horrible. We would leave. I would leave class or leave home at, you know, classes start around 7 or 8. Leave home around 6 or 7, and you would literally have on 3 layers of clothing.
Right.
Just to get on the bus, honestly, and then from the bus to class, and once you get to school, you'd find your locker and, you know, disrobe and take off all the layers and then go to class. And I mean, because it's medical school and the hours are long, you would be in school for potentially, you know, 10 hours or longer, so you didn't really have to worry about it until it was time to go home, where you'd put all your layers back on. And so that was the one good thing, is that we weren't in medical school. Most of your classes are all held in one building.
Right.
So you're not going from, you know, building A to B to C.
Right.
So during school, that was fine. When we weren't in school, you know, there's not a whole lot of extracurricular in medical school. It's 4 years of very intense education. So the weather didn't affect me too much, because I would go skiing with friends once in a while, but for the most part, you were indoors studying in the library, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Now, go ahead.
No, it was still a good experience. I mean, I learned how to ski there. I went ice fishing, which is pretty interesting. So.
Now, when you attended the University of Wisconsin at Madison, how did that experience help shape you into the physician that you are today, considering that there weren't a lot of individuals that looked like you?
I think when I was graduating University of Wisconsin, that was one of my goals. I wanted to come back home to the South. I wanted to come to Atlanta. And so Emory University really appealed to me, which is in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And there are only a few emergency medicine programs in Georgia. There are only two, actually, in Georgia. So my whole fourth year was targeted to building my resume, building my grades, making sure that I would be a great candidate to be able to get back to Atlanta. But when I moved back, in Atlanta, you're surrounded by physicians who look like you, doctors,
right.
nurses. You know, it's just one of the norm. You're not an eyebrow raise when you walk in the room, because there's so many people that look like you. So when you move to places like Atlanta and Houston, where this is almost the norm. I would have a shift, you know, even as a physician now, you have shifts where, you know, the morning ER doc was a black female, the afternoon ER doc is a black female, the night overnight ER doc is a black male. You feel good about yourself, about your people. It's like we're all over the place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's concentrated. You only see that in Atlanta and Houston, you know, maybe some places in Maryland, you know. But that's definitely not the norm throughout the country.
What is it about emergency medicine that's different from regular medicine? What are some of the extra things that you have to learn to be an emergency physician?
In emergency medicine, you don't pick your patients.
You don't get
to decide who walks in the door.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You know, you can be thanked by one patient and be cussed out by the next patient.
Gotcha.
You have drug seekers that come in the door. You have people who have real pain that come in the door.
Mm-hmm.
You have patients who pretend to be in pain. You have patients who never followed up with their cardiologist, and you know, they come to you to fix their problems, and they never went to clinic, you know, so you just don't get to really, you know, have any control over your shift or your day. I have friends who, you know, either they moved and they had to try to establish with a new OBGYN because they need a new doctor, and then they have to, the OBs sometimes get to kind of, you know, decide if they'll be able to take that patient based on their risk or their history, et cetera. With ER, you just, whatever comes in the door is your responsibility during that period that they're there. And that could be seen as a positive or a negative thing. To me, it's just part of the job. One good thing is that you do get to impact lives in a short period of time. You get to educate people as much as you can during the time that you have them. You know, you have patients who, you know, things like hypertension, you don't always have symptoms from it. So people come in with blood pressures that are sky high or just out of this world, and you have that, you know, 1 or 2 hours to try to either scare them into taking their medicines or educate them enough just so they can get back on board, start on their meds, follow up with their doctor, you know, get their cholesterol checked. You know, you have a very, you know, finite period of time to be able to impact their lives. And also with emergency medicine, you're able to get all these tests done and kind of get people on the right track. If a patient's, for example, patients with uncontrolled blood pressure, you can do an EKG and show them, you know, these are the effects that's having on your heart. And this is, you know, we can check your kidney function. We, you know, we can check your heart out, all these things, and show them, you know, sort of raw data that says, hey, you know, you really need to take control of your health today. So, I mean, those are good things, I think, about emergency medicine. Some of the, you know, obviously the negative things is that you see people at their worst and their best. You see people, you know, in dire, you know, in distress over, you know, whatever it is, heart attacks, strokes. You see it all. So you over time, you carry their burdens. You carry their emergencies either home with you or their stress. You carry it home. But I don't see them as negative things because they're part of medicine. Every field has its own. You know, my brother is he's a rehab physician, so he sees patients who've had strokes or who have medical problems that are end up being chronic, and he has to carry that home. You know, so he has to try and treat them during their time in the hospital or during their post-hospital period after their stroke or their neuromuscular disease, and that's just part of his field. There's no perfect field that you can be in where you don't, because they just, like, people are unhealthy, people have health problems, and you as a physician, it's your role there to try to get things better for them.
I know that's right. Dr. Foyer, you're 31 years old, and you woke up one morning and say, I want to open a ER clinic.
Yeah.
What brought that on?
Well, I'm 32 now.
I'm 32 now.
My birthday was a couple of weeks ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. So I woke up so Houston, Texas, we have a lot of ERs that are similar to this. So it's not something that hasn't really been done necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
However, as far as what, you know, led me to do it, I work in a few ERs in Houston, and a lot of times I get to work and there are, you know, 15 or 20 patients in the waiting room waiting on me. There are patients in the ER waiting to be admitted.
Okay.
There are patients who are admitted who can't get a bed upstairs, so they're taking up space. So you just start seeing the repetitiveness of the clogged system, where you can't get patients out of the ER and you can't get patients in the waiting room inside the ER to get treatment. A lot of times we'll go into the waiting room and pull patients aside to a small room and try to start the workup, look at their wrist, listen to their lungs, see if they need an x-ray, and just try to basically triage them from the waiting room or try to order tests or start treating them from the waiting room, because you don't want them just sitting there waiting.
Right.
You don't know if there's a heart attack in the waiting room waiting there. You don't know if that chest pain out there is a pneumonia or a blood clot in the lungs. You don't know if that fracture there is not getting blood supply to the, you know, to the extremities. So you have to, and you're responsible for everything that comes in there, because your name is already on the chart whether you saw them or not. Once they walk in, they are assigned Dr. Foyer, you know. So I may not have seen them, but my name is, I'm responsible for them. So you start seeing that enough, and you start having, you know, dissatisfied patients enough that you start, you know, that's how these came about, is, you know, do they have to come to this building to get emergency care? And that the answer is often no. A lot of people who come in walking and talking can receive a lot of these treatments at a separate facility, you know, and that's why Lifesavers Emergency Room was created. We can see patients, we can bring them straight back, because we don't have the long wait. We don't share our X-ray machine with the ICU as well as the regular floor and the rehab floor, so we can get patients treated a lot faster. Our lab is dedicated just for our ER patients, so we're not having a waiting line for the ICU patients' labs to get run, or the, you know, rehab patient, or basically the rest of the hospital to run their labs before we can get ours in. So the patients like it, because they come in here and a lot of times they've been sitting at another hospital for a few hours, and then they Google and they see, oh yeah, let me go there. So they'll come here and they'll come straight back to the room. They see a doctor within about, you know, 10 minutes of walking in the door, and they're always pretty amazed at it. And I think it's an awesome thing. A lot of, you know, states and cities need to really look into this, because healthcare doesn't have to be, you know, the way it is today.
Right. What was it about Northwest Houston that you said that we need to have this type of emergency room located in this area?
What was it about Northwest Houston? I mean, I think there's a need for it probably all over Houston,
okay.
All over Texas. This happens to be where we live, where, you know, I have a family. My son goes to school in this area, and I work in the area, so I know what it's like when I work at the hospitals, and I felt like this would be a good, you know, environment to establish it.
Now, Texas, I don't know about other states, but like you said, there are a lot of emergency rooms located in different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is a gigantic financial outlay. How did you go in the bank and say, okay, I want to open up an emergency room?
Yep, that's pretty much what I did. We have a, you know, there are a lot of things that the government has, or initiatives the government has taken to allow small business owners to be able to, you know, finance and develop whatever passion or program they want. So we did get a lot of help from the bank and with SBA lending to be able to get it approved.
How has faith played in all the decisions that you've made thus far?
Oh, it's been the backbone of everything. I don't believe that we could have gotten this far without faith, without God, without His, without, you know, guidance and support. You know, we ask for favor in all that we do. And when I go to work and I see patients, I pray about my patients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the decisions that I make, so it's not just the patients, it's, you know, daily. You know, I definitely commit everything to God that, you know, the things that we do will not only just, you know, you want to treat a patient, you know, but you also want them to have good health. You want them to, you know, want them to be impacted positively past all that. We see a lot of patients with mental health in the ER. And, you know, they may be there for, you know, wrist pain, and then you find out they're depressed, and you find out all this other stuff about them.
All right, Dr. Foyer, I know you got to go because you're out of the emergency room. Doctor, a couple more questions. How do you strike the balance between work and family?
My husband and I, we work together. He manages the office and operations of everything, and I try and focus on seeing the patients. So that makes things a lot easier. We don't have to outsource, you know, a lot of things because we work together. We have a pretty, you know, great family as far as support.
Dr. Foyer Ikiato, emergency room physician and medical director of Lifesaver ER, located in Houston, Texas. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.